Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Shakambitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bandhu Chakatpate Kopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostate Tapta Kamsana Kauranti Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Namami Hari Priye Panchakalpatarubhyascha Kripasindubhya evacha Patithanam bhavanibhyo Vaishnavebhyo namo namaha Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasadi Gaura Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna,
Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare,
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna,
Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare,
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna,
Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare,
Hare Rama, Hare Rama,
Rama Rama, Hare Hare,
Hare Krishna. Welcome to Sri Sri Radha Gopinath Temple. Recently, we were together for Narasingha Chaturdasi. Was that the last lecture I gave here? And Narasingha's appearance day. Rohini Nandan Prabhu, thank you for that wonderful kirtan. Today we are celebrating the appearance of Lord Ramchandra. Can everyone hear? Thank you. I'm very honored, very grateful for this opportunity to be with you. This truly is a special day in the history of the universe. As far as I know, today is the 25th anniversary of the inauguration of Radhaparta Sarati Temple in New Delhi. Which is also the home of Sitaram, Lakshman, Hanuman, and Gornitai. And it is also the anniversary, Ram Navami, for Krishna Balaram Temple in Vrindavan. His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada, chose the appearance day of Lord Ramchandra as the day to install Krishna Balaram, Shri Radha Shama Sundar and Gornitai in his and our eternal home in Sri Vrindavan town. Ram was an ideal leader, or forever is an ideal leader in every way. In fact, within our movement, by Srila Prabhupada's inspiration, of course, Sitaram, Lakshman, Hanuman reside and preside in the capital of India, New Delhi, in the capital of the UK, in London, in the capital of the United States of America. I don't know how united it is these days. In Washington, D.C., Sitaram, Lakshman, Hanuman, and in Srila Prabhupada's office at Radharas Bihari Temple in Juhu, Mumbai. Krishna tells in Gita, Paritranaya sadhunam vinashaya chaduskritam dharma samstapanaradaya sambhavami shuke shuke. That he appears again and again to reestablish the true principles of dharma, to annihilate the miscreants and protect the pious. And Krishna tells Janma Karma Chanaitivyam Evam Yoviti Tatvata Tyaktvadeham Punarjanma Naitimam Eti Sojana. That one who understands the transcendental nature of my appearance and activities never takes birth again in this material world but attains my abode. So this is the primary reason that Krishna appears. Not only according to time, place, and circumstance, but each of his incarnations, the effect is forever. As explained in this verse in the Gita, these are transcendental activities. Transcendental means beyond time, beyond space, beyond the limitations of birth and death. They are eternal. Nitya Lila. By hearing them attentively, we are present in the pastimes of the Lord. Why, Srila Prabhupada and our acharyas, although we are devotees of Vrindavan by tradition and by faith, why so much emphasis on Sitaram, Lakshman, and Hanuman? To give such primary presence in our temples, in our lives. Because the pastimes of Lord Ram forever reveal through example the true values that every human being is meant to strive for. Valmiki's Ramayana begins with Valmiki Muni sitting in his ashram among his disciples. It was at that time that Narada Muni visited him. Valmiki Muni, one of the greatest gurus that will ever live. But still, when Narada Muni, a senior Vaishnav, appeared in his ashram, he humbled himself totally and offered all respects. And he did so not only out of his own heartfelt, humble nature, but also as an example for others. Mahajano Yenakadasa Panta. The path of spiritual perfection is to follow in the footsteps of great souls. Tadvedi Pranipatena. Krishna accepted a guru. Sandipani Muni. Lord Ramchandra accepted Vishwamitra. Valmiki, in his deep thirst to hear the glories of the Lord and his deep compassion for all living beings, for all people, for all time to come, he inquired from Narada Muni. The very beginning of Sri Ramayana is so much relevant to the times we live today. Here in Mumbai, Pune, and every part of the world I've seen or not seen, it is human nature to emulate the values of what people call heroes. Yes? That's what the whole advertising industry, entertainment industry, music industry, banking systems, governments, politics, education. We set people on like an altar of being our role models, our heroes. As parents, you see how your children do that. And in Kali Yuga, especially these days, they're usually not very enlightening heroes to people. People want to look up to others. People want, even if they're egoistic as anything, still they want to emulate qualities that they either envy or look up to or idolize. So this is human nature. And for adults, we like to think that our children do that, but we still do it just as much as them. Because we are so influenced by who we associate with. And we're especially influenced by people we look up to. So Valmiki Muni, for you and me, even though it was a couple yugas ago, for all time to come, he sat at Narada Muni's lotus feet and inquired from him. Of all the people who are living in the world today, that means during his time, because we like to idolize contemporaries, who is the greatest person? And then Valmiki Muni made a whole list. Of course, he spoke it. In those days, they didn't write lists. They spoke lists. Of what the qualities are we should be looking for in a great soul. Who is most humble and courageous? Sometimes these qualities appear to conflict with each other, to be humble and courageous. But a Vaishnav is the most courageous because a Vaishnav is most humble. When there's no false ego, we are completely in the shelter of Krishna, who is the supreme hero. Ishwara Parama Krishna. He's the supreme controller of all controllers. He's supremely beautiful. Of course, when Krishna performed his pastimes in this world, he set the highest examples, but then he did things that were completely transcendental to all mundane conceptions. But when he appeared as Lord Ramchandra, he especially set examples that we are meant to strive to follow. Who is the person with the highest values, with the deepest compassion, with the greatest skills and qualities? Please tell us about him. Narada Muni was so happy to hear this question because he understood, like in Srimad Bhagavatam, when the sages of Naimisharanya were asking, what is the highest dharma for all living beings? What is the duty of a person about to die? The response was, your question is glorious because it is meant for the ultimate benefit of all living beings. Narada Muni then explained that living in the world today is Lord Ramachandra. And then he gave a brief narration of the pastimes of Lord Ram. From the situation of Ayodhya, before his birth, to his birth, throughout his whole life, And then Narada Muni departed. Makimuni, with his very dear disciple Bharadvaj Muni, they went to meditate and absorb themselves deeply in the katha that they just heard from Sri Narada Muni. They sat on the bank of the Tamasa River. Quietly, just meditated what they had just heard from their guru. It was absolutely transformative and beautiful. It was a wonderful day sitting on the bank of this pure river. Two birds, a male and a female, a sort of crane named the Kroncha bird, just across from where they were sitting, were singing together and enjoying each other's company. Valmiki and Bharadvaj were watching, and they were just so happy to see these birds, so happy. Everything was just perfect. Natural scene, birds singing, enjoying one another, remembering the beautiful glories of Lord Ram's life. Suddenly, a hunter appeared with a bow and arrow. He shot an arrow right into the body of the male bird. The Kroncha bird screamed in pain, fell to the ground, wiggling in agony, blood splurting in all directions. And meanwhile, his companion, his female, sort of like his wife, she was seeing the love of her life suffering miserably. She was covered with his blood. She was crying, screaming. The male bird died. She was mourning. Upon seeing this, Valmiki, in his compassion for the feelings, now sometimes devotees question, why would a person care if somebody dies or suffers if we know that they're not their bodies? Well, you can go and ask Valmiki Muni. Because he's among the greatest of all rishis, a disciple of Narada Muni. Because a devotee is paradukaduki. Another person's suffering is his or her suffering. Another person's happiness is his or her happiness. But of course, for a self-realized soul or an aspiring devotee, that is always in reference to the eternal soul and our relationship with God, Krishna. But Valmiki was not only suffering, but he was outraged. And spontaneously, he shouted out a curse. Oh, wretched hunter, for the pain, suffering, and death that you have caused to these two birds, may you suffer endlessly.
After he said that, he felt ashamed, because devotees aren't supposed to get angry like that. Or they are supposed to get angry like that. But he was thinking, he said to his student, why did I do that? Why did I lose control of my anger? And this hunter, he's a hunter. That's what hunters do. He killed a bird, and I just cursed him to suffer endlessly. But then Valmiki was thinking, the way I spoke that curse was so poetic. Million times more poetic than the way I said it. It was in beautiful Sanskrit language. It was a verse with four lines and eight syllables to each line. And he said to Bhardwaj that this is the perfect poetic way of describing Ram's Leela. He said, actually, it's the right mood too, because I spoke out of compassion for the suffering of others. Thinking like this, he went back to his ashram, was among his students, was discussing Ram's Leela, when Lord Brahma appeared. Lord Brahma is the original guru, the guru of Narada Muni, within our universe. And Lord Brahma said to Valmiki, you shouldn't feel bad that you cursed that hunter. Because actually, it was all by divine arrangement. Because the meter and the poetic way that you spoke is how you should describe the entire pastimes of Lord Ram. You have heard from Narada Muni, now you meditate upon what you hear. And I will personally give you a vision of Ram's Leela. Valmiki Muni composed Ramayana, 24,000 verses. Srimad Bhagavatam is 18,000 verses. And he was thinking, among all of the devotees, who is most fit to spread the glories of Lord Ram by memorizing and repeating what I have spoken? Valmiki wasn't looking for just someone with good memory, because back then in Treta Yuga, almost everybody had really good memory. Interesting, he himself had already revealed that the real qualification to transmit the glories of the Lord is a feeling of compassion for others. So among his many, many students and sages from all directions, he chose Lava and Kusha. We're here in Mumbai, and I think all of you know Ramayana from the time you're little babies. You've been hearing it. when Sita was sent away from Ayodhya to live with Valmiki Muni, she was pregnant with Ram's children. They took birth in Valmiki Muni's ashram, Lava in Kusha. Brought up by Mother Sita, in the association of Valmiki and all the sages, and the two sons of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Ramchandra. He taught them the Ramayana and sent them out to preach the glories of Ram. And with great enthusiasm, they went here and there and everywhere, reciting Ramayana. And according to Ramayana, they came to Ayodhya. And Lord Rama himself happened to be roaming through the streets and heard them reciting. He brought them into his court, where Lord Ramchandra invited his ministers, his brothers, his family, so many great Brahmins, to hear the narration. By the Lord's own transcendental pastimes, although he knows everything, when the Lord comes as a human being to set an example, part of knowing everything is apparently not knowing everything. He didn't immediately understand they were his own children. And as Gauranga Prabhu was explaining so nicely this morning, I was listening to every word on the speaker. Lord Ram and everybody in the assembly was weeping in ecstatic love to hear this narration. So the Ramayana is 24,000 verses. And I've been given about 1 hour to speak. So I'm just going to start somewhere and then end somewhere. So Ramayana begins narration with the description of Ayodhya. It was the capital of the world. Such a wonderful kingdom. The king at the time was Maharaj Dasarath. And he was coming from a long lineage from the Ikshvaku dynasty. There was Vaivaswatamanu, Ikshvaku, and then these are self-realized kings, saints, avatars who were ruling. And therefore everyone was happy. There was no poverty. Why? Because everyone was generous. No poverty doesn't just mean that everybody somehow or other has a job and works hard. No poverty means nobody's lazy, but everybody is inspiring one another. This is the conception of Varnashram Dharma. Like anything in this world, in Kali Yuga, even beautiful things become perverted and distorted by selfish motivations. Chaturvarna mayastrista guna karma vibhagash. Krishna explains in Gita, I have established this Varnashram Dharma system. where everyone, according to their nature, according to their activities, everyone is performing their duty for the well-being of everyone in the service of the Lord. Srila Prabhupada would explain, like the body. Every part of the body is serving every other part of the body. When your heart is beating, the heart isn't just doing it for itself. The heart is supplying blood, oxygen, to every cell of the body. So Varnashram Dharma and Daivi Varnashram Dharma, where Krishna, or service to God, recognition that everything is the property of the Lord, is where everybody is trying to make everyone else happy. And when you try to make everyone else happy, you're happy. Well, Srimad Bhagavatam describes how you make everybody else happy. You have to water the root of the tree. By putting food in the stomach, that nourishment goes to every part of the body, and by watering the root of the tree, it goes all the way to every leaf, branch, and twig of the tree. So in Ayodhya, because the leaders were willing to give their lives for every citizen was willing to give their life for everyone else. So there was no crime. Everyone was well behaved. And if anyone wasn't, there was swift, compassionate justice. But still, Dasarath Maharaj, can you imagine being a political leader of such a society? How successful? And in those days, nobody even wanted to vote because they loved their ruler. Why did they love their ruler? Because they had confidence and faith that their ruler loved them and all their loved ones. But Dasarath Maharaj was feeling great pain in his heart, because he was getting older and he felt a responsibility. He didn't consider that this is my position of being the emperor. It was entrusted to him by his forefathers and foremothers. And it was his primary duty to entrust it to his offspring. He had no son. He tried and tried, but there was no son. He considered himself, however nice things are, he was thinking of the future. If I don't serve the future generations, I'm a failure. How many of us think like that? If somehow or other we get by and things are doing all right, we think my life is a success. But great souls, they're thinking of generations and generations and generations in the future. That is as much my responsibility as today, to give that assurance. He was suffering. Everyone else was happy, but he was suffering. But seeing him suffering made everyone suffer. he approached his guru, Vasishtha Muni, and expressed, "I want to perform an Ashwamedha Yajna. It's the most difficult ceremony that's possible. In order to perform an Ashwamedha Yajna, first of all, you have to be the emperor of the world. Nobody else could do it. Then you have to send a horse to roam wild throughout the earth. And wherever the horse goes, surrounded by, you know, many ministers and soldiers, wherever that horse goes, the local leaders must accept a subordinate position to the emperor. Otherwise, there's a battle." So this horse roamed around for a full year and came back, and everybody willingly accepted Dasarath. So now they could actually begin the yajna. That's just like a preparation. Dasarath's chariot driver and one of his chief ministers was Sumantra. And Sumantra confidentially told the emperor that, "I had heard Sanat Kumar, the great rishi, son of Brahma, describe that you will have 4 sons. If the son of Vibhandaka, Rishyashringa, performs the Ashwamedha Yajna, that means the grandson of Kashyapa Muni." And now he told the history of Rishyashringa. He was living in the kingdom of Romapad Maharaj, living in the forest with his father. And his father, Vibhandaka, was so protective of his son. They lived in such a secluded, pure part of the forest that he actually got no association with anyone except the purest sages and his father. So, it's a long story, but Rishyashringa was induced to come to the kingdom of Romapad Maharaj. Romapad Maharaj was, his kingdom was suffering a serious drought. And if somehow or other this sage could come to the kingdom, there would be prosperity. So they sent some beautiful young ladies. And Rishyashringa had never seen a female in his, he didn't even know what it was. But they dressed themselves as sages, and he was like thinking, "These are really nice sages." And he welcomed them, and they embraced him, and he was thinking, "You know, these are very nice sages." And they invited him, "Come with us on a boat." And then, you know, he came to Romapad Maharaj's kingdom, and there was great prosperity and rains. And he married the daughter of Dasarath, who was entrusted to Romapad Maharaj. So Rishyashringa was invited to come to perform the yajna. as the culmination of the yagya was approaching, all the great demigods from the heavenly worlds were coming to accept their portions. And eventually Lord Brahma came. The demigods were reporting to Brahma that we are all living in fear of the Rakshasa Ravana. He is so powerful. He's defeated Indra. Only if the Supreme Lord appears in this world can he be defeated. Lord Brahma prayed, and Vishnu appeared to accept his portion of the yajna. Lord Vishnu proclaimed to Brahma that I will incarnate. Dasarath Maharaj will have 4 sons, and I will be the eldest. And the demigods should expect, while carrying on their duties in their positions in the heavenly world, they should expand themselves as divine monkeys. Each one having the same opulence of power and knowledge as the demigods themselves. When this blessing was bestowed upon the yajna, Rishyashringa did the last offering. A divine messenger of Vishnu emerged from the flames of the sacred fire. He had a dark complexion. He was as brilliant as the sun. He was holding a golden pot filled with payasam. He gave that pot to Dasarath Maharaj and instructed him, share this with your 3 primary wives or queens, and you will have 4 sons. Then he entered back into the fire. Maharaj Dasarath, after the yajna was complete, he gave in charity to all the priests and Brahmins. He returned to his palaces and gave shares of that payasam to Kausalya, Kaikeyi, and Sumitra. Instantly, the Supreme Personality of Godhead and 3 expansions of the Lord appeared within their hearts. And on this day of Ram Navami, Lord Ramchandra was born. And from Kaikeyi, Bharat, and from Sumitra, Lakshman, and Satrughna. The 4 brothers became the heart and soul of the entire kingdom. Lakshman was constantly immersed in loving service to Lord Ram. And Satrughna was similar, the constant servitor of Bharat. They were best of friends. They went through their studies. They grew up. Lord Ram captured the hearts of all the people of Ayodhya. He was their life and their soul. One day, the great sage Vishwamitra entered into the kingdom. Dasarath Maharaj, upon hearing that he had arrived, welcomed Vishwamitra and put him on his own throne, washed his feet, worshipped him. This is culture. Dasarath Maharaj was what could be likened to the supreme political leader, multi-billionaire, successful in every way, now with the most glorious children. And Vishwamitra Muni was just wearing tree bark, living in the jungle, had no possessions. But his renunciation and his devotion were his wealth. And Dasarath realized, this is greatness. He offered anything. Whatever I have, Vishwamitra Muni, it all belongs to you. You can take anything. Of course, he knew Vishwamitra Muni would not take anything. But still, he meant it. Vishwamitra Muni said, oh, you have offered me anything? I want your son, Ram. Only for a short time. Even for one moment without Ram, Dasarath could not bear the thought. He said, why do you want to take my son? He said, I want to take him to my ashram because there are rakshasas who are spoiling our spiritual ceremonies. Dasarath said, yes, can you tell me about these? He said, they are Maricha and Subahu, the deputed generals of Ravana. The word Ravana struck terror in the heart of Dasarath Maharaj. Even the demigods fear him. Dasarath Maharaj understood, even if I go myself with all of my military, I cannot compete with the generals of Ravana. And yet, you want me to send my son? He was still a teenager. Dasarath did not see him as the supreme absolute truth. He saw him as his son. Dasarath Maharaj volunteered, I'll go myself and I'll bring the entire army. But even we don't have a chance. I cannot send my son. Vishwamitra did not say anything for some time. But he was glowing with disapproval. Dasarath Maharaj was very much frightful. Vasishtha Muni said to Dasarath Maharaj, Vishwamitra Muni is so powerful, I have personal experience. He has celestial weapons. As a sage, he will not fight. But he will empower, he will supply all of his powers to your son Ram. There is nothing to fear. But if you go back on your word to him, everything will be finished. Vishwamitra was entrusted with Lord Ramchandra. And Lakshman volunteered, I will go too. In the forest, Vishwamitra Muni was giving so many beautiful lessons to Lord Ram. They walked along the Sarayu River. They came to the place where the Sarayu River enters into the Ganga. And he told the story, this is the place that Kamadev was burnt by Lord Shiva. And then they came to the Siddhashrama eventually. Is that sound? Can we make that go away? All of the disciples of Vishwamitra Muni were so happy to meet Lord Ram and Lakshman. They began their yajna, and Maricha and Subahu attacked, creating havoc, polluting everything. They were so envious. They knew that if these yajnas were, if these devotional acts were fulfilled, they would be defeated. Vishwamitra Muni gave the order to Ram. With one arrow, he shot Maricha. And I think he flew 800 miles and landed in the ocean. Then he shot Subahu in the heart and ended his life. They completed their yajna, and then they all decided, Ram, come with us. We are going to Mithila to see the great bow sacrifice of Maharaj Janak. And eventually they arrived there. And Maharaj Janak greeted Vishwamitra and told the whole story of how this bow was the bow of Shiva that was used to defend all the devatas. And it was given to one of his forefathers long, long before. This bow was so heavy that to move it on wheels required at least 800 soldiers. And he told the story how one day he was performing a yajna, and to prepare for the sages' offerings, Maharaj Janak was plowing the field. And from under the plow, the beautiful goddess Sita was born. And so many people were coming, demigods, sages, rakshasas, everybody wanted to marry Sita. And Janak made a vow, only the person who could string this bow will marry my Sita. But the problem is no one could even lift the bow. Years were passing. But seeing Lord Ram, Janak had faith. That he will be the husband of Sita. There was a beautiful stadium. The people of Janak Mithila were gathered, and Ram approached the bow. He asked the permission of Vishwamitra. And with the blessings of his guru, Ram lifted the bow effortlessly above his head, pulled the string, and broke it. Sita and all of her friends were looking on in great joy. And the arrangement was made for Ram to marry Sita, along with his brothers, to Sita's family. When they returned to Ayodhya, there was nothing but joy. Dasarath Maharaj He was feeling the effects of old age, and he was dreaming of coronating Ram as the future king. At this particular time, Bharat and Shatrughna were visiting with Bharat's grandfather in a distant land. And Dasarath was making the arrangements, and all the people of Ayodhya were longing, praying, and waiting for the day Ram would be their king. But Dasarath Maharaj saw inauspicious things happening, and he was having unpleasant dreams. So he decided, with the blessings of Vasishtha Muni, that the next day would be the coronation. When the news spread, everyone was celebrating. The maidservant of Kaikeyi, the mother of Bharat, was seeing all of the joy, and when she found out what was about to happen, she was overwhelmed with envy and fear. Why do we fear? We fear death. For the eternal soul, death is completely unnatural and foreign experience. We fear pain. We fear loss. The false ego fears not getting what it wants. And from fear comes envy. And from envy comes more fear. She was struck with fear and envy. If Ram becomes the king, what will be my position? I'm the maidservant of a subordinate queen who's the mother of a who will be subordinate to Ram. So in this way, the demigods actually, everything was going so nicely in Ayodhya, in order for the battle with Ravana, there had to be some disruption. So they actually influenced Mantara. Kaikeyi, when she learned from Mantara that Ram was going to be the king, she celebrated. She loved Ram as much or even more than her own son. But Mantara convinced her that if Ram becomes king, Bharat will be persecuted. The power of association. It was then that Kaikeyi succumbed to Mantara's gossip, criticisms, and envy. And Mantara gave her the plan that long ago in battle, you were driving a chariot with Maharaj Dasarath, and he was severely wounded. You saved his life by bringing him off the battlefield and nursing him back to health. At that time, he gave you two benedictions. And you asked for nothing. You said, in the future I will ask. Now is the time. Now is the time, but we're out of time. But essentially, the two benedictions that she demanded of Dasarath Maharaj was that my son be coronated as the future king and that Ram be exiled for 14 years into the forest. When Ramchandra received this news from his stepmother Kaikeyi in the presence of Dasarath, he accepted it. Dasarath Maharaj was utterly broken, but Ram simply accepted it. And along with Sita and Lakshman, wearing nothing but tree bark, they entered into the forest. The the story of Bharat's return, learning that his father had died in separation. He went to where Ram was residing in Chitrakoot, and literally begged Ram to come back to be the king. Bharat's prayer, let me remain in the forest for 14 years. In today's world, where people are so competitive for their own selfish interests, of course, very rarely do people recognize that their interests are selfish. Here we find Bharat is begging Ram to be the king and let me remain in the forest. And Ram is insisting to Bharat, I will stay in the forest, you be the king. Great conversations, great debates, great arguments took place. But Ram's resolve to honor the word of his departed father prevailed. Bharat set wooden shoes before Ram. Ram momentarily stepped into them. Bharat put them on his head and returned to Ayodhya. Put those wooden sandals on the throne. And he remained in a secluded forest called Nandigram, where he lived only eating raw roots and fruits. He wore matted hair and nothing but tree bark. He slept on the cold ground for 14 years. He performed all the administration for the kingdom as the servant of Ram's sandals. Ram happily lived in Chitrakoot with Sita and Lakshman. Later they moved to nearby Panchavati, Nasik. It was there that Suparnaka attacked Kara and Dushan, and 14,000 soldiers attacked. Ravana kidnapped Sita. In Tarkat, there was the great battle of Jatayu and Ravana. The Ramayana is so full of sadness. When Sita was flying overhead, being forcibly abducted by Ravana, who disguised himself as a sage just to deceive her, she saw Jatayu, who was very old, and she called down, Jatayu, please don't try to help, because you're too old and Ravana is too strong. Just tell Ram when he comes where I am, where you saw me, and what has happened. Jatayu was willing to die rather than do nothing. He attacked Ravana and fought him with every bit of his energy, all of his might. But when he became exhausted, Ravana cut his wings, cut his legs, and left him laying in the ground in a pool of blood. Sita ran to embrace him, blessed him in every way as Ravana dragged her away. After some time, Lord Ram arrived on the scene. Jatayu explained what happened. It was the first news of Sita's whereabouts. Ram embraced him. "You have given your life for my Sita." Ram promised Jatayu, "On this very day I will send you to my eternal abode." And with his head in Ram's lap, chanting the name Ram Ram, Jatayu went back home, went back to Godhead. Lord Ramchandra was crying. He expressed to Lakshman, "Never have I suffered such a loss. Even greater than the loss of Sita, even greater than the loss of my father Dasarath." "Jatayu has given his life for my devotee." Jatayu was a bird, a very old bird. But Lord Ram and Lakshman performed the last rites for Jatayu and blessed him. They continued in their search for Sita according to Jatayu's direction. At Pampa Srovar, they met Shabari. A simple, uneducated lady who just lived to offer service to Ram, waiting for years. Ram gave her spiritual perfection. And it was there at Pampa Sarovara that Ram met Hanuman, made allies with Sugriva. Spent 4 months of the rainy season in Kishkindha Kshetra. And then deputed the Vanaras, headed by Hanuman, to search for Sita. And Ram gave Hanuman his own ring to present to Sita. They met Sampati, the brother of Jatayu, who was very old, but he had really good eyesight. He's in Sri Lanka, 800 miles across the ocean. Ravana has kept Sita. Hanuman jumped across the ocean. Every type of impediment was coming before him. But for Hanumanji, every impediment was simply an honor to serve. He reached Sri Lanka. He memorized how it was constructed to report to Ram. He discovered Sita. He gave her Ram's ring and gave her the hope and the promise that Ram was coming. And then, just to do some extra service, he burnt down most of the city. He personally, face to face, chastised Ravana, and then he jumped back. When Ram and all the monkey armies were assembled on the seashore, Vibhishan, the younger brother of Ravana, was giving such loving, wise, enlightened advice to his brother. Ravana was outraged. Vibhishan came and surrendered his life to Lord Ramchandra. When there was a debate whether to accept a Rakshasa brother of Ravana as one of their own, Lord Ram proclaimed, "Anyone who wants takes shelter of me, I will protect and accept forever. Even if Ravana were to come to take shelter of me, I would give him protection forever." Then the great battle of Sri Lanka, Indrajit, Kumbhakarna, and ultimately Ravana. Ram and Sita were reunited, and they returned to Ayodhya. The 14 years had expired. Bharat was still living in the jungle, wearing tree bark, waiting for Ram to come. There was a great coronation. And Lord Ram, for the next 11,000 years, ruled over Ayodhya. I've given a very brief, spaced out summary of the 24,000 verses. But Sri Dhammasaka Prabhu said after 9 o'clock you're not allowed to get prasad. So I trying to emulate the mood of compassion I'm will not subject you. But I was hearing a recording of Srila Prabhupada, and he was talking about Lord Ram's leadership qualities. when he was king, there was a report that came to Lakshman. And Lakshman shared this report to Lord Ramchandra, who's now the king of Ayodhya, that there was a very simple man, a very great devotee. Every day he would come to have darshan of Ram, because Lord Sri Ramchandra, on a regular basis, would allow any citizen to come and meet with him. This person, he would not eat until he had darshan of Ram. But sometimes Ramchandra would go, because he's emperor, he would go on some journeys. Sometimes he would be gone for many days at a time. This person never said anything to anyone. But at such times when Lord Ram was away, he was starving. So when Lakshman told Ram, Ram called that devotee. And gave him a deity of himself. He said, I am non-different than this deity. The history of that is Maharaj Ikshvaku, the son of Vaivashvata Manu, worshipped that deity of Ram as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And the deity was worshipped throughout the centuries, generation after generation. And when Ram became the king of Ayodhya, Srila Prabhupada said he put the deity in a closet. But he personally gave that deity to this devotee and said, whenever I go away, you have darshan of me in the form of this, and you have nice prasad. This was the nature of Ram's compassion. The Ramayana, the story of Lord Ram's pastimes in this world, are filled with challenges, heartbreak, sorrow. How Lord Ram, he fainted and wept when he heard that Dasarath left his body in separation from Ram. How his dear devotee Jatayu died in his arms. How his beloved Sita was gone for almost a year. So many challenges, so many difficulties. The 14 years where Kausalya and all the devotees of Ayodhya were suffering in separation from Ram. Sita living in tree bark, yes. Ram is setting example of how to live by the highest values as a son, as a husband, willing to fight a war for his wife, and Sita willing to live in the jungle for her husband. Why? Because that's what life is like in this world. Spiritual life is not just a convenience. To live with devotion, to live with integrity, to surrender to God, requires that we're willing to perform our service even in the face of great difficulties. This is the type of heroes that the world needs to idolize and emulate. Not just people who can dance nice and sing nice and look nice, or who have lots of money. They may have all those things, or they may not. But Ram took the role of a human being to teach us how to be human beings. And he staged his pastimes in times of difficulty and loss. Because that's what we need to learn. That's how we need to live. Because that's the way the world is. Our own beloved Srila Prabhupada, how Krishna staged his life. Days on a cargo ship, heart attacks. He arrived in New York, he had a stroke, he had heart attacks. He lived in poverty. Why? Because he's an acharya. He's teaching by his own example. So don't think that when we turn to God, everything's going to be really nice. It is going to be really nice, but not in the way that we may like it to be. We should not lose faith when things go wrong, because from a material perspective, the whole creation is designed to go wrong. Birth, old age, disease, and death are inevitable for everything and everyone. And of course, we would like it to go according to our plan. Birth, old age, disease, and death, you know, that's a philosophical matter, but it should go according to my plan. But it doesn't. That's the story of Ram. That's the example of our avatars and our acharyas. Yes. Today, Ram Nomi, we of course, I believe all of you know all the spaces between my spaced out narration today. He's God who's come as a human hero to teach by his example and all of the devotees of Ram. So let us, on this holy day of Ram Navami, pray that we could emulate that spirit of taking shelter of the Lord and surrendering to the Lord, whatever may happen or whatever may not happen. Let us not be disappointed or disheartened with the inevitable tragedies of this material world. What does it mean to chant Hare Krishna and be happy? It means to find our happiness in Krishna's grace, which is forever. Thank you very much.